The following is a lecture given at a home program by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on November 11th, 2006, in Houston, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So tonight we will read from the fifth chapter, text number 24, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is. Yantak sukantararamas tatantar jyotirevayah
sayogi
brahma nirvanam
sayogi brahma nirvanam
brahma bhuto dgacchati. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. Unless one is able to relish happiness within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can therefore sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahma Bhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back home, back to Godhead. Om Agyanatim Anandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadanayam Dati Sabadantikam. So, reading this very nice description of Srila Prabhupada, I was thinking, what is an example of this? Being able to sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. What a very active movement. But then I was remembering the first day that I was with Srila Prabhupada back in 1971. When I saw a practical example of this in Prabhupada's activities. He had flown into the San Francisco airport. You know, there's 200 or 300 devotees there to greet him. It's a big thing. Prabhupada coming in for the Rath Yatra. You know, devotees can come from all over America to meet him, to be there at the festival, and many of us had gone to the airport. But one thing, one little mistake had been made. There was no vehicle to take Prabhupada back. There was no car. So you think, well, you're probably to start yelling and chastising, you rascal. No, Prabhupada demonstrated this verse at that moment. He wasn't sitting, but he was standing there. You know, you come out of the airport, you come through the door, and you're out there where the cars pull up. So Prabhupada walked out there to get in the car, and there was no car. There are some pictures of this, and actually there's photographs in the old Vyasa Puja books. You see him sometimes around ISKCON. Prabhupada standing, just peacefully standing, and all these devotees around him. Nothing's happening. Prabhupada just standing there silently, serenely standing there. You see. This is an example, actually. Prabhupada stood there and just waited peacefully. He didn't say a word. He just stood there as an aristocratic gentleman and just waited. Actually, I didn't stay around. We went to the Rath Yatra site, so we greet him again. We were there to greet him at the Rath Yatra site when he showed up. But yeah, I stayed there for a few minutes and was just amazed how Prabhupada is not disturbed. He's just peacefully standing here. And he's relishing some intense happiness within. But what's happening externally was a spaced out mess. But inside, he was feeling his relationship with his Guru Maharaj. He was feeling the relationship with Krishna, with Lord Chaitanya. He was feeling deep ecstasy, actually, within his heart. And he didn't need anything external to feed that, actually, because he had it within his heart. So this is a wonderful lesson that we can learn from these pastimes of Prabhupada, how we should become so situated in Krishna consciousness that even if externally we're in a difficult situation, like, you know, being arrested or, you know, some kind of externally inauspicious situation, the moment of death, you know, troublesome things that we wouldn't normally like to do on a regular daily basis, you know, problematic thing. We should be so well situated that we can just glide through it, you see. A nice example is this. Just consider the ocean. There's a hurricane, an intense hurricane happening on the surface of the ocean. The waves, you know, just really turbulent hurricane. But what happens if you start going down deep into the ocean? The deeper you go, the less the influence of the hurricane is felt. And if you get deep enough, it's completely calm and serene, as if there was no storm happening on the surface. So if you look at it like that and consider the external energy, all these things in the material world, is this something happening out there in the external energy? And our position is in the internal energy. You see, Krishna consciousness means taking shelter of the internal energy. So we just have to learn how to be good deep sea divers, you see, into that ocean of the internal energy. And what is the diving method? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
This is why we should chant with great focus, not just, you know, thinking about so many other things while I'm chanting. When we chant, we should just go deep, deep, deep into the name. Because the deeper you go into the name, the more you become situated within, in the internal energy, the more you become aloof and far away from the biting, scorching influence of the external energy, which is, you know, going through all those kleshas, you know, adiatmic, adidaivik, adibhautik klesha. I mean, it's not really fun to suffer, but that's the fate of one who has not taken shelter of the internal energy, who hasn't learned how to situate himself or herself within the internal energy. Then they have to feel the biting, scorching, torturing, tormenting, you know, influence of the external energy. So we have our choice. I mean, we have a free choice. It's not that we're just products of destiny. Everybody has a choice. As Prabhupada says, man is the architect of his own destiny. We have the choice. We have a very, very clear choice, each and every one of us. You can't blame it on anyone else. Well, and my friends or my parents or my government. You know, you can't blame it on anyone else. Our position of either suffering or relishing the deep happiness within simply based on how seriously we have taken the process of awakening that dormant enlightened consciousness which is within, Krishna consciousness. The instruction is very clear from the Vedanta Sutra. Tato brahma jigyasa. You've got a human body right now. Therefore, you have a duty. Human life comes with a responsibility. It's like if you get a job at a big corporation, they give you the real fancy office, they give you a special parking place near the door, you know. Then you have very big responsibilities. If you get a big position, you have big responsibilities, you see. So, human life is a very big position in this material world. While everybody else is running around in the cold tonight, we're in this heated house, you know, all the insects and the raccoons and the, you know, they're out there, the skunks and the rats, they're out there in the cold, and we get, you know, of course it's going to get colder, but we're here in a nice comfortable house. You see, human life has comforts and facilities, which is not there in other forms. We have air conditioning for the summer. We have heating for the winter. We have a roof for the rain. We have so many ways to counteract miseries in this material world. We have, you know, we have jet airplanes. We have so many things. So these facilities that we have, of course, they also, you know, in Vedic culture, they had chariots, they had mystic powers, where they could immediately go from one place to another. You see. So what is all this facility for? Is it for sense enjoyment? No. It is meant to awaken that dormant, enlightened consciousness within. Now you've got a human birth, Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you must utilize it to understand who I am. Where have I come from? What is my destination? You see, this is the purpose of our human existence. So if we don't use it for that purpose, then what it is called? Squandering. You see, it's like having a greater inheritance, but then spending it on wine and women, you see, and becoming broke once again. So that means if we don't properly utilize this human life, then we must go down to the animal kingdom. If we live as animals in this lifetime, running after eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then we are showing the Lord what is our proclivity. My dear Lord, I'm more inclined to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So to facilitate our desires, the Lord will give us that position. People say, well, God is so cruel. No, God is not cruel. God is unlimitedly kind. Krishna has unlimited kindness. He's bestowing unlimited kindness on every single living entity at every minute. He's giving us what we want. He's simply giving us what we want. So one has to understand what is the best type of desire that one should have. You see, what is the best, what sort of desire? I can desire as I choose. I can desire moksha, I can desire kama, or I can desire bhakti. You see, you can approach Krishna with all three things. That verse in the Bhagavatam. What do you want? We have to intelligently understand what is the benefit. If I go after kama, then what do I get? I may get some quick pleasure, but in the long run, what do I get? So many problems, you see. Enjoy today, suffer tomorrow. The best program is you do some austerities now so you can get pure, unlimited enjoyment in the future. I remember when I was a high school kid growing up here in Houston, back in the mid-60s. We all know how heavy the humidity is here in the summer and how the air conditioning really helps you make it through. But in those days, they didn't have the schools were not air conditioned. We're going to make the kids austere. No air conditioning in the public schools. And the end of the spring semester in May was tough. I mean, that humidity could, especially like in fifth period and sixth period, well, that humidity would just kill you. But we had to endure it. But some of the students, they thought, why should I endure all these austerities of high school? I will drop out. I will get a job at the gas station. I'll buy a hot rod. And then every day during fifth period and sixth period, they'd be out there in front of the high school, rum, rum, running their hot rods up and down, burning rubber outside of the high school, just to advertise to all of us students that you are suffering there in fifth period physics class, and ha, 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 I'm out here in my hot rod having a great time. Well, 10 years later, where is that hot rod person? He's still working at the gas station, right? And where are those students who did the austerities? They got their college, in their high school, got their college, they're sitting in some air-conditioned office as a computer programmer with a big fatty salary, you know. So, the point is, we have to understand what is ultimately the best thing. In Sanskrit, of course, this is called Shreya. What is ultimately the most beneficial thing? It's either the immediate quick thrill, the cheap quick thrill you can get, And there's that which is ultimately beneficial. So an intelligent person understands he has a long-range vision, you see. What is my ultimate benefit? That's he wants to know. What is that verse? Tasmad gurum prapadyecha jigashu shreya uttamam. You see, he's interested in shreya uttamam. What is ultimately beneficial? He approaches a spiritual master, following the injunction of Bhagavatam. He will approach a spiritual master, take shelter of the spiritual master by initiation, because the spiritual master will teach that student how to achieve that which is ultimately beneficial. How to achieve that state of consciousness as described here by Lord Sri Krishna. To where one feels unbounded happiness in any and all circumstances, even in the most trying of all circumstances. Prabhupada explains a devotee, even if he's in a suffering condition, he's very happy in that condition. Because if he's suffering on behalf of Krishna, and he understands that this suffering is pleasing Krishna, then the devotee is ecstatic, even in a suffering condition. Prabhupada explains in this way. He actually relishes suffering. So if you can relish suffering, then what can ever bother you? If suffering is enlivening, then anything which is, you know, not suffering, you certainly would be enlivened then too. But even if suffering is enlivening, yes. So this is the amazing transcendental nature of Krishna consciousness. And then from the other side, it's very amazing in the Bhagavad Gita. I remember when I first joined the movement, it was amazing to me. The Bhagavad Gita says, don't be disturbed by unhappiness. I understood that, yes, okay, fine. Then it said, don't be disturbed by happiness. I went, what? Don't be disturbed by happiness. I mean, that's what I want is happiness. Who would be disturbed by happiness? You see? But, we, you know, with a little training, we understand what that means. That means material happiness. To be disturbed by material happiness means to get all excited about it, actually. To lose your equanimity. To relish happiness, that's very nice. Devotees, Prabhupada very much enjoyed being happy, but he didn't get excited about it, you see, get carried away by it. Because as soon as we get carried away by any sort of happiness in this material world, then we're just setting ourselves up for the opposite number, material suffering. So we should take material happiness in a very cool-headed, transcendental way. Okay, now I'm getting some happiness. It's Krishna's kindness. We should offer everything to Krishna. If I'm getting some nice facility by Krishna's arrangement, some nice income, some nice prestige, some nice position, we should not become carried away. We see it even in our society, this kind of society. Some devotees who had big position, so much money being donated to them, they fell away because they got carried away by them. They were disturbed by that position, by that opulence. So one has to be very, very transcendentally situated. And simply always remain in that mood. I am humble servant, that's all. I'm not enjoyer. I'm simply servant. And we have to always remember, we are not enjoyer, we are servant. And whatever comes, whatever enjoyment comes, offer that in Krishna's service. Whatever suffering comes, everything in Krishna's service. Everything dovetailed. That is called Krishna consciousness. Everything dovetailed. We take that spirit, then we will truly be able to exemplify what is described in this wonderful shloka, Bhagavad Gita. We'll be liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately we will attain the Supreme. Sometimes we forget that it's actually possible to become liberated. We get so caught up in the daily routine. We forget it's actually possible to become liberated. But it's a fact. Prabhupada wrote me one letter. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. Prabhupada was ordering me. You have to qualify yourself now that you can see Krishna face to face. So that's real. Krishna is real. Krishna is not mythological. He's a real person. He's there right now, within our hearts, within every atom, between every atom. He's there in the spiritual world. He's more real than anything else. He's the foundation of reality itself. Reality exists because Krishna is there. So we have the connection with Krishna by our very nature, because we're His energy. By our very nature, we have that connection with Krishna. We are His offspring, you see. Just like the children have connection with the parent. So we have that innate connection with God. We have that innate connection. So all we have to do is revive that connection. This wonderful process, Krishna consciousness, bhakti, yoga, has been so carefully handed down. Even when Krishna spoke to Arjuna 5,000 years ago, he says that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you. So can you imagine? It was ancient 5,000 years ago. How ancient is this science? See, this is actual science. Science means knowledge. It does not mean speculation. And nowadays what they call science, it is nothing but speculation. If it is actually science, they will not be revising the textbooks. The textbooks will not be revised if it is actual science. Science means when you have come to the conclusion, when you actually understand things as they are, that is science. I one time attended a scientific gathering, so-called scientific gathering, the University of Florida, back in my brahmachari days, about 1973, I think. So one big scientist came in to tell us all about black holes in outer space. And there was about 3,000 students there. I mean, it was big. Every science student in the whole campus showed up for this, to hear the big guru. The big Guru Maharaj of science came to reveal the secrets about the black holes in outer space. That was huge thing. I looked a little different. I had my saffron and my shaved head. I looked different than everybody else. But I thought I shouldn't just. I had heard what Prabhupada said about the scientists. I was just checking it out firsthand. Okay, let's see where they're. Let's see, I've heard everything that Prabhupada said, now we'll go see him in action. So I raised my hand when the question and answers came. I said, is this a theory or is it a fact? He said, I think it's a fact. So then a few more questions came in. Again, I raised my hand. I said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some time, and another theory comes along and replaces it. So how do we know that your theory, you know what I said, theory? It's a loaded question. How do we know that your theory will not be replaced with another theory? And he said, I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. So just see the rascal. He is saying it is fact, and then 2 minutes later he's admitting actually it's a theory, and when, as soon as it's disproved, that will be the progress of science. And everyone in that room is thinking, this is fact, this is gospel. You see how much they're being deluded by these scientists. You see how much they're being deluded. So actual science is that which does not change. Bhagavad Gita, this is the ultimate scientific textbook as confirmed by Krishna himself in chapter 9, text 2. Raja Vidya. But he also says Rajaguhya. Why? Because they'll never understand it. They are covered by the influence of Maya. Therefore, it remains secret. They cannot understand. They cannot penetrate their brain. Their dull brain cannot penetrate. Because they are under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Sattvagun, Rajagun, Tamagun. If we actually want to know things as they are, we must come out of the influence of these modes of nature. We must take shelter of Guru, we must take shelter of Krishna, we must take shelter of the holy names. These are our real friends, you see. Before you met your spiritual master, where were you? You were lost, isn't it? Before you met your spiritual master, you were lost. Like a ship without a rudder, just being blown around the ocean. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano nu vidyate tatashyaharati pragyam vayur navam vivambasi. As a boat on the water is carried away by a strong wind, even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can carry away the man's intelligence. So we only had one sense of his being attractive? No. All of our senses are being attractive. All of them are being. Even if only one of them was carried away, that's enough to completely bewilder you. But we're being carried by all of our senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the genitals, everything. Everything was carrying us away. So what was our position before we met our spiritual master? We were in bad shape, very bad shape. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. That living entity who is in such bad shape, wandering throughout the Brahmanda. It's interesting, I always thought the Brahmanda is this one universe, and it generally is. The Prabhupada also mentions Brahmanda can refer to the whole cluster of universes also. That can also be considered the Brahmanda. So, back to the point, that living being who was, that poor fellow who was wandering throughout the Brahmanda, you see, if he somehow can come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Guru and Krishna, he will get that bhakti lata bij, that seed of bhakti planted in the heart, so that if he cultivates that seed properly, he can actually come out of this quagmire-ish, hellish nightmare of material existence. He can come out of it. So what does he have to do, he or she? If a living entity is that fortunate that he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, then he can either take advantage of that opportunity, he can capitalize on that opportunity, or he can let that opportunity go. He has a choice. See, Guru does not force the disciple, the prospective candidate for being disciple. He gives the opportunity. He gives the opportunity. The person can take it or leave it. You see. The intelligent person, he realizes, I've been blessed. I have come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. Now let me capitalize on this opportunity to make my life perfect and get out of this rotten material existence. So, how does one capitalize? If you have a seed planted in your garden, what do you have to do? You have to water that seed, isn't it? If you don't water the seed, it will dry up and die. And you also have to make sure there's no weeds in that garden. Because the weeds, even if you water the seed, if you don't weed around it, the weeds can choke it up. Because you know how, all our gardeners here, you know how fast those weeds grow. They're horrible. Your nice little plant, whatever it may be, struggles to make it through the Houston summer. But those weeds are going. So one has to be very, very cautious to pull the weeds out of the garden. You see, what are those weeds? Illicit sex life, meat eating, intoxication, gambling. You see? And there's one other thing one has to watch out. What is that called? Hati Matta. You know the Hati Matta, the mad elephant? I don't think they charge through Houston, but, you know, there are some places where mad elephants go charging. Now, what if your creeper is there, you're watering it nicely, you got all the weeds out, and all of a sudden this mad elephant just comes, wham, crush, finish. You see? That is called mad elephant. Hati matta. And what is that mad elephant? That is Vaishnav apara. So how Prabhupada says we must build a very strong fence around that garden to keep the mad elephant out. So, what is the practical means of doing that? How do we avoid being offensive to devotees? Well, some people say, well, I just won't associate, that's all. I'll just come to the temple, offer my obeisances, and get out. We see that. Some people, they like that. Just come, offer obeisances, and go. They don't want to get involved with the devotees. And sometimes even devotees, neophyte devotees, will think, I'll just do my service, you know, touch no one and no one touches me. I'm a rock, I'm an island, you know, like that. But that really doesn't work. You can't avoid being offensive by avoiding association. That doesn't work. Sooner or later, if you're not associating, you're holding on to an offensive mentality, and sooner or later it'll come out. It will. So we have to be proactive. What we have to do is cultivate wonderful, positive, loving relationships with the devotees. You see, that's what we have to do. Rupa Goswami has given us this wonderful formula. You see, dadati pratigrinanti. In this way, six kinds of loving exchanges mentioned. You give gifts to the devotees. You accept gifts from the devotees. You stivit prasadam to the devotees. You accept prasadam when the devotees offer it to you. You reveal your mind to the devotees. You open your ears when devotees want to reveal their mind to you. You see. In this way, by engaging positively in these six loving exchanges and filling up your whole life with this wonderful loving exchange with Vaishnavas, then there's no room for offense anymore. If you're always loving the devotees, then the offense won't, there won't be any room left. If your heart is full of love, then when Kali comes to try to find a little place to hang out in your heart, there won't be any room. It'll be a big sign, no vacancy. When Kali shows up to see if there's room in the hotel of your heart, no vacancy. Every room is filled up with Vaishnava Sangha. You see? Every room of the heart. So, what is the facility for doing that? That is known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I think you've heard of that society. ISKCON, yes. This wonderful movement, ISKCON, is a facility to develop loving relationships with Vaishnavas all over the world. It's just amazing, so many devotees. When I joined the movement, it's just, not so many devotees. It's mushroom like anything. It's amazing. When I first went to Mayapur, I was amazed to see, there's a few Indians here. It was all, white-skinned devotees, externally speaking. Of course, we're not really white-skinned. I'm Grazies, But I was amazed. There's actually some Indians who have joined. That's wonderful. The Indians are also joining Krishna Consciousness Movement. It's happening. And when I came to Houston also, in that time in North America, in all the temples, it was all, Native Americans. And when I came to Houston, it was 1976. And there was a big Janmashtami there in the parking lot by 1111 Rosalie. And I was amazed. All these Indians. It was so nice to see all the Indians now are getting involved with this kind. So now the demographics have shifted a lot. See mostly Indians and a few, I'm talking externally. But anyway, the point is that we have to be very enthusiastic to engage everyone in Krishna consciousness. Because this movement goes beyond the bodily conception of life. This was the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. that from everywhere they will, he said, Prussia, Russia, America, they will all come, Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana. So this is the wonderful house that Prabhupada has built. Actually, he has given us the foundation and the framework. Now it is up to us to fill it in. Actually, it's amazing, but the instructions that Prabhupada has given us are just absolutely amazing. There's one tape that I hear very often in the morning. And Prabhupada is saying in this tape, he is saying the whole world is being managed by rogues and demons. He says, now, make your life successful and you take the management. Prabhupada has ordered us that we should manage the world. Can you imagine? We're thinking how we can manage our own life, how we can manage our temple. But Prabhupada is saying, I want you, now you must manage the world. That's the order he gave. So what big responsibility we have, on one hand, to become pure devotees, completely cleanse our heart of all the inertia. On the other hand, to engulf this entire planet in this tidal wave of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, you see. That is, you may say, well, come on, it's not possible. Why would you even, don't think like that, you just get discouraged. Someone may argue, well, don't even think like that, you know, you just feel discouraged if you think we have to make the whole world Krishna conscious. But actually, it's predicted by Krishna Das Kaviraj, who is actually one of the eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual world, who has perfect knowledge of past, present, and future. Krishna Das Kaviraj has directly stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Satjana Durjana Pangu Jada Anda Gana Prema Vanyaya Dubaila Jagatera Jana. Some of you probably know Bengali, but for those of us who don't, we will analyze word by word. Sat Jana, when in Sandhi it becomes Satjana for pronunciation purposes. You merge it, so Sat becomes a J. So Satjana means the saintly persons, the Sat Jana. Satjana. And then Durjana, that's the opposite, the rogues and rascals, Durjana. Satjana Durjana Pangu is like we say, Pangu Langa Yate Girim, the lame man can cross the mountain. So Pangu is the lame person. So the pious, the impious, the lame, Jada, just like Jad Bharat, invalid, the invalid, and then Anda, like Anda, we say Anda Kupa, the blind well, so the blind person, the invalid person, the lame person, the pious person, the impious person, prema vanyaya, that prema, that tidal wave of prema, the Krishna consciousness movement, you see, dubaila, drowned, jagatera jana, everyone throughout the whole universe will be drowned. So that is the prediction. It's not a question of if it will happen or not, it's just a question of when. That's really up to us how much we can purify our hearts and how much we can enthusiastically push forward this movement. It's really up to us how fast it will be sooner or later that the whole world will become engulfed in this tidal wave of Krishna prema. Prediction is already there. It will happen. Prabhupada said in 5 days, in his books, he says in 5 days this Krishna consciousness movement can inundate the entire world. 5 days. Can you imagine today is the 16th? If by the 21st of November 2006, the whole world became Krishna conscious, it's possible. It's not impossible. So we simply have to do our part. Each one of us has a small part to play in this big movement. Whatever role we have to try to do it perfectly, that's all. Whatever my service is for Prabhupada's movement, let me try to do it with full sincerity. If I'm a pujari, let me do that with full sincerity. If I'm a book distributor, if I'm a householder, showing an ideal life of Krishna conscious while earning a livelihood and making my family members devotees, whatever my position is, let me do it sincerely. Let me do it enthusiastically. Let me do my part to be purified and to transform this planet into a Krishna conscious planet. So in this way, if we focus our hearts on Krishna consciousness within and Krishna consciousness without, then our success will be guaranteed. Srila Prabhupada has very nicely explained in his purport in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. He has given a very nice meaning of this verse, Bahir Nasingo Hridaye Nasingo. We sing that every morning. Bahir Nasingo Hridaye Nasingo. Of course, literally it means Nisringa externally and Nisringa internally. You just look at it literally. What are the words, you know? Without Nisringa, within Nisringa. Externally Nisringa, internally Nisringa. But Prabhupada has expanded to understand what does that mean? He says it means we are praying like this. My dear Lord Nisringadev, please dwell within my heart so that I'm killing all the sinful desires, so that my heart may become completely clean. And let me bring peace to the entire world. That's how Prabhupada translates that prayer. Bahir Nisringa, Hridaye Nisringa. Devotee is begging Lord Nisringadev, please sit in my heart, kill all the inauspicious within my heart. So my mind may become perfectly clean so that I can spread peace throughout the world. I can spread Krishna consciousness. You see? This is the wonderful prayer that Prabhupada has given us to sing at the end of every arti. They were praying that I can become Krishna conscious, and we're praying the whole world can become Krishna conscious. We're praying that we can be an instrument in the hands of our spiritual master for pushing forward this movement. On our own, what potency we have? Nothing. But if we can act as instruments of our spiritual master, then this is our spiritual master we have seen. Just like here, we have seen what incredible potency Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj had for establishing Krishna consciousness movement. And we see that his potency is still acting because he has so many dedicated servants here who are always meditating on him at every minute and always trying to please him every minute and feeling his presence at every minute, you see. So even though he's not physically present, he's very much here. His actual person, he's actually here. And that's proven by what's happening here at this temple, how this thing, that this project is expanding and growing. That means that His Holiness Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev is very much present here right now, this minute. The disciples are very, very dedicated to pleasing Him and serving Him with love. So in this way, the empowerment is passed down from master to disciple. So we can hold on to the lotus feet of our beloved spiritual master, serve him with great dedication and love, then the empowerment that he has gotten from his spiritual master, that empowerment will come to us. And we will be able to purify ourselves of the anarthas within the heart and to spread this Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of the fallen souls of this Kali Yuga. So we're very, very happy. Vishnupriya Mataji and I are very, very happy to be here tonight. We wonderful devotees. We're very blessed by your association. And I can ask now if there's any questions.
Mm-hmm.
course, I have a policy. If you don't ask questions, you know what that is. All right.
You are saying that not to talk of expanding Krishna consciousness only in this area, but the whole world, you know. But I have been trying personally myself. I cannot even sell a book, you know. I don't know what to, in circumstances, you know. I try to.
Well, there's a very nice resource if you want to sell books. I know I turn on my disciples to this website, www.distributebooks.com. And now he's out there distributing books. I just told him, I gave him the link. I said, here's the link. And he read what was on the webpage, and he went out, he goes on the college campuses. He met a librarian on a campus in a small Alabama town. This woman bought 8 books, and now she's chanting 2 rounds a day. Just because he decided to go out and distribute books in a small town in Alabama. So every devotee should take the books, you know. If you don't know how to distribute, and go to www.distributebooks.com. It'll tell you everything. Just follow the instructions. Or you can always ask any devotees locally who are distributing books how they're doing it. But we all should learn how to distribute books to our friends, to the general public. We should all learn how to distribute these books, because this is the most powerful weapon for pushing forward this movement. This movement is codified in the books. You see, this movement will only be pure insofar as we are connected with the books. By reading them, by worshipping them, by living them, and by distributing them. This is what makes our movement what it is. If we stop reading the books, we stop following the movements, this movement is dead. The books have to be read, followed, and distributed. That's how our movement will be strong. So everyone should think, how can I distribute these books? What can I do to see that these books are going out all over the world, all over Houston, all over Texas, all over America? What can I do? Is there something I can do? So you should find some devotees locally, or in the www.distributebooks.com is also there. You can email them or call them up also. I'm sure they'll be happy to give you personal instructions. I know Prabhupada gave me personal instructions about book distribution. He said that if you simply describe the books in the most descriptive manner, the best descriptive manner, then anyone, even an atheist, can be convinced to purchase. Prabhupada personally gave me some book distribution training. You just have to describe how wonderful the book is. Actually, he told one devotee how to distribute books. You simply repeat this verse. This Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun. And it has arisen after the departure of Lord Sri Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. And then you hand them the book. The key is get the book in their hand, because the book has Shakti. Even if they don't take the book, if they just touch the book, they get blessed. Somehow just say, hold this book for a minute, I'm going to tell you about it. Just hold it, look at these pictures. And even if I'm going to say, just show them the pictures. Show them the pictures. Say, this is Prabhupada. See, he's the greatest spiritual master in the history of the whole universe. His divine grace, Shiva Prabhupada. And you just, you know, tell him, here's Krishna, and here's Arjuna. This is the most amazing conversation that ever happened in the history of the world. And you can have this book just for the price of a donation. We're not even selling the book. We want to give it to you as a gift. We're asking you to give a contribution so we can give out more gifts. You know, there's so many ways to do it. Just be sincere to distribute the books. You can go to the Indian store and set up a book table in front of the Indian store. You see? Make a nice display. The best thing is set up a nice display somewhere where people will come, get permission from one of the Indian stores to set up a book table in front of the store. You know, have a nice attractive display. Make it very beautiful and attractive. Have your best, you know, your nicest dhoti on and everything. Just be out there with a big smile, nice prasadam, you know. Make it very positive and attractive. And you'll be amazed. People come up and say, okay, I want this one, and this one. Just make present the books nicely and people will be attracted to buy them. That's the thing. You don't have to be a salesman, just be a presenter. You don't have to convince them to buy. Krishna will do that. Just be a presenter. Just tell them how nice the books are and Krishna will take care of the rest. Any other question? Yes.
Maharaj, is it a good idea to approach someone actively to present the book or to sell the book, or let him come and see and then you talk to him?
Either way is good. Either way is good. Prabhupada approached us. He came as an aggressor to the U.S. He didn't wait for the United States, the people in the U.S. to invite him. That, you know, I'll sit here in Vrindavan, if somebody wants me to come to America, I'll go. No. He came as an invading army. One man invading army to take over the place, Krishna consciousness. Actually, you know what? Prabhupada told us in Atlanta that he thought he would be a failure when he came here. You know, it's amazing. He actually told us in Atlanta, because he said that my godbrother, he was preaching in England to Lord Jetland. Prabhupada said Jetland. It's Zetland, but apparently his Bengali tongue doesn't say Zetland. So Prabhupada said Lord Jetland, Bengali way. He said Lord, he was preaching to Lord Jetland. And Lord Jetland, he had been the governor of Bengal during British rule. So he said, he knew about Brahminical culture. He said, Swamiji, can you make me a Brahmin? And Prabhupada's godbrother said, yes, I can make you a Brahmin. You can follow these rules. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. So Lord Zetland immediately replied, impossible. So Prabhupada told us, I was thinking when I came to your country, as soon as I tell them no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, they immediately say, Swamiji, please go home. But Prabhupada said, but I thought, let me try. So Prabhupada actually took the role of approaching. He approached us. He actually approached us. As here is Krishna. So, if you're able to approach, that's very good. If you're not, then set up, let them approach you, with make a nice table. If you feel uncomfortable approaching them, and you make a nice arrangement, well, they'll approach you. Either way is good. Somehow it doesn't, see, it's not that we have to, this is not the International Society for Approaching People. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Whatever you can do to make them Krishna conscious, that's what counts. If you can get them to approach you, that's great. That's fantastic. I know that's what I do on the internet. I put a page out there and people approach me all the time and sign up for my e-course. I get over 5,000 people in over 100 countries getting regular daily doses of Krishna consciousness, buying books, becoming devotees. So somehow find a way to, you know, to preach. Whether you make something nice that they're attracted or you find a way to approach them, it doesn't matter. Either way is fine. You can, whatever works for you, whatever you're comfortable doing. Whatever enlivens you, do that. Find a way to do it. Because the fact is, as Prabhupada says, if you actually feel for your countrymen, then spread this Krishna consciousness movement, they are dying. That's a fact. They are dying. I just think about what Houston was like when I grew up here in the 50s, and what it's like now, how the Kali Yuga has invaded this place. I mean, Kali Yuga was there then too. Actually, there was a bumper sticker that said it well. The bumper sticker said, do you remember when sex was dirty and the air was clean? That was the bumper sticker. Now it's just the opposite. Sex is clean and the air is dirty. In those days, sex was considered dirty. But the air was clean. And now we've made sex the most, it's clean. The more you have sex, the cleaner you are. That's the philosophy nowadays. And the whole atmosphere is so polluted. The air, the water, sound vibrations, everything just polluted. The more we've made sex the end-all and be-all of existence, the more the world has become a hellish nightmare. That's a fact. We have to make Krishna the center. And that we have to do. So somehow or other, see what you can do to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Be the ideal example. That's the first thing we all have to do. The first business is make yourself Krishna conscious. Chant 16 rounds, 16 good quality rounds every day. Follow the principles. Become initiated by the bona fide spiritual master. We have so many wonderful gurus in our movement. Take shelter of one of those spiritual masters who enlivens you the most in your Krishna consciousness. Get yourself solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. And then preach. Actually, even if you just serve this temple, that's automatically preaching. This temple is a preaching tool in the hands of this movement. So if you just serve this temple, mow the lawn, you know, plant flowers, whatever. Any service you do for this temple, that's automatically preaching. Clean the pots in the kitchen, it's all preaching. Actually, any serve, you know, donate money. Just like I was amazed, so many devotees here have given so much money. I saw the roster in the temple room. This is wonderful preaching. If you can work hard, have a good business, and give money to the temple, that's wonderful preaching, you see. What an ideal example you're setting, and what wonderful potency there is to give money to make a beautiful temple so preaching can go on. So there's many ways. This movement is giving many ways. Sing, through song, through dance, through poetry, through, you know, so many ways we can engage in Krishna service and promote this movement. Festivals, cooking, so many ways. Any other questions?
Yeah. How does one dovetail one's suffering in Krishna consciousness?
Yes. Well, you have to be suffering for Krishna's service. That's just like, for example, in one sense, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning is considered suffering for Mangalarti. You see, that's an example. And many devotees have a difficult time getting up for Mangalarti, but Prabhupada. So the two most important things are chant 16 rounds and attend Mangalarti. When it's far away from the temple, then you can have it at home. Have a Mangalarti at home. You're too far away. But that's an example of how you can dovetail suffering in Krishna's service. For many people, it's suffering to get up that early in the morning. It's like torture, isn't it? I get that. It's like a torture. To get up every morning. Of course, once you get used to it, it's the sweetest nectar. That's an example. Or for preaching work also is a type of suffering. Just like Vaisheshika Prabhu, who is one of the empowered, the greatest, most empowered book distributors in the history of ISKCON, he said every time he goes out on book distribution, he gets nervous. Can you imagine? Even Vaisheshika feels butterflies in his stomach when he goes out on book distribution. So that's to feel nervous, that's a suffering condition. But he suffers on behalf of the living entities. He wants them to have Krishna consciousness. So he's willing to take that suffering on himself of feeling uncomfortable and nervous, of knocking on doors, you know, door-to-door samkirtan, knocking on doors. You never know what's on the other side of the door. And you knock on that door. I mean, I went out in a streetlight one time with the books, and what did I get? I got a gun in my face. A loaded gun right in my face. You never know what you're going to get. That's a suffering condition. And then I got arrested for a heinous crime of distributing Back to Godhead magazine. They took me and they put me in jail. They threw me in a jail cell. 36 hours spent behind bars. But I was enlivened because I knew I was suffering on behalf of Krishna. I knew that I was pleasing Krishna by being there in that jail cell. I was willing to go to jail even for, in order to distribute Bhakti Guided magazine. So, this is an example. It's taking up, if devotional activities, just like Prabhupada gives the example how it's a suffering condition to cook in the heat. I mean, especially in the summer here in Houston, the kit is the kitchen air conditioned? No. I mean, that is really suffering in one sense. To go into the kitchen in the middle of this hot, humid Houston summer and cook with all the fires blazing. I used to be the cook when we were at Rosalie Street. I remember the summers. Wow. That was intense. But you just kind of like groove on the austerity. You just learn how to relish the suffering for Krishna. I mean, you just train yourself to do it. And it's enlivening. You become inspired and enthused and energized by taking the austerity. So if there's something is difficult for you, if something is austere for you, then you should become enlivened to do that, because that to involuntarily embrace that suffering condition for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna will actually bring you into a higher, more enlightened state of consciousness than you've ever been before. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kongshati. You see? The Brahmabhuta platform, where there's no hankering, no lamenting. You're beyond the dualities. So unless you're willing to embrace suffering, you can never really taste Brahmabhuta. One has to be willing to embrace suffering for the service of the Lord. Any other questions? So, I think there's prasadam in them.
Yes.
I don't want to hold it up. So we're very happy that you have so nicely heard our humble attempt to present this philosophy. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srimad Bhagavata ki jai.
Jai.
ISKCON Houston devotees ki jai.